Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. We are halfway through 2022. So today's show is a best of the year so far episode, featuring segments we included in previous monthly roundups we called Some of It. We begin this hour with journalist Michelle Hoard, whose latest book details what happened before, during, and after the most tragic day of her life. On June 6, 2017, in Westchester, her 7-year-old daughter Gabrielle was murdered by Michelle's soon-to-be ex-husband, the little girl's father. The man is now serving 25 years to life for suffocating the child, a bright sunbeam of a girl who was the pure joy of her mother's life. In her book titled The Other Side of Yet, Finding Light in the Midst of Darkness, we learned what happened on June 7th, 2017, and then a month later, a year later, 3 years later. In it, Michelle writes, "There are many days then and now when I have to look into a physical mirror or the mirror of my heart and say, yes, it happened. No, it will never add up. It will never make sense. No explanation will ever quench the thirst of trauma and grief left behind." Michelle Hoard is a gifted storyteller, having worked for years as a television producer, and she lets us into the story of her life while she drops some real truth about loss and grief and survival. She writes, "Some wounds don't heal, they scar. More than an impression, they leave imprints on your body and soul. The way we transition from our yet to our after is simple, but not easy." Michelle Hoard joined me in April and talked about her daughter, the importance of language, and the resources that have helped her cope with tragedy. Here's our conversation. Would you describe a Gabrielle story that lets us know just everything we need to know about Gabrielle?
Well, for starters, I could see her geeking out with me in the car if she heard mommy's voice in one of mommy's poems, as we made up stories and poems and songs together every day on the radio. So I'm having a little moment with her right now after having heard my poem previously. She was effervescent, like her little feet looked like they never touched the ground. And she had a beautiful, warm, kind spirit. And of course, mommies think that. But what was so powerful for me was after I lost her, I received a book from her classmates called Gabrielle's Kindness Journal. And each child on that paper that they have in elementary school with the big, you know, area to write and then the big area for drawings had drawn a picture of themselves with her, described her in a word, and told a story. And the stories were like, Gabrielle is kind because she got me off of the buddy bench. Gabrielle is kind because she stopped someone from bullying me. Gabrielle is fun because she was my first friend in Girl Scouts. So what a treasure. You know, your little one doesn't come home from school and say, hey, this is what I did today. But what a treasure and gift for me to get their reflections on who my baby was.
You've worked in TV a long time. I worked in TV as a producer. We TV producers like plans and maps, and we want to know what's happening. And you write in the book that healing is not a linear process. When did you realize this was true?
You know, before I lost my daughter, I talk about in the book losing my mother and grandmother 3 months apart when I was 24. My mother was not sick. She died of a cerebral aneurysm at 50. And every year I realize how young that is as I get older and as I cross that threshold. And at the time, her mother was dying of lung cancer. So at an early age, in a very different way, obviously, I had my earliest confrontations with grief and shock. And so I knew that this was dramatically different, that this was not a air quote normal grieving process. It is painful to lose your elders if you're 10 or 110, but there is that assumption that you will. And the losing of a young child, the way I lost her, the betrayal of who stole her from this world, taught me early on, as did my therapist, who was amazing, my trauma therapist, that there's no playbook.
I'm glad you brought up your mom, because you wrote this line that's been sticking with me. You wrote, historically, Black mothers do not prepare their children for a buffet of acceptance and tolerance. They prepare us for war. And my mother equipped me for whatever was going to come my way. What was a life lesson you got from your mother that was useful or helpful to you after Gabrielle's death?
I think my birthright and inheritance from my mother was her faith. I'm the granddaughter of a Baptist preacher. I grew up going to church every Sunday, rolling my eyes as I had to get ready for Sunday school. I was just joking with someone the other day that I never got that song "Easy Like Sunday Morning," because I was like, Sunday was like every other day. We had to get up and get out of the house. So I think not realizing that those songs and those prayers that just by osmosis seeped into my heart and spirit and helped me grapple with her death would also be that faith insurance policy in a different way when I lost my daughter. So her unwavering faith, and I have her Bible with her markings in the margins, is something that I've held on to.
My guest is Michelle Hoard. The name of the book is The Other Side of Yet, Finding Light in the Midst of Darkness. Support systems are something we know we all need, and many of us are fortunate to have them. You did. What was something your support system did that was really meaning for you practically and then also spiritually?
The practicality of a sudden traumatic loss, there are things that I will never know. Practical things like I was moving out of a rental house back into the family home with my daughter before all of this happened. And so literally finding somewhere to live and someone who had to go to my former home and try to video around police tape to show me things to see if I wanted to keep them or not. Mm. Practical of me declaring that Gabrielle and I were going to wear white at the funeral and having a somewhat wine-induced, because it was required, parade of the different dresses that I was, so I could pick what I was going to wear and we could pick what Gabrielle was going to wear. But on a spiritual level, one of the most amazing things is immediately one of my friends decided there would be no television. And so there was music on all the time. There were candles burning all of the time. And they initiated, I had five girlfriends in the book, I call the five the hard way I have in my phone to this day. And they initiated a prayer call on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. And people from all over the country, sometimes people I didn't even know who were friends of friends, would join every week. And that not only became a spiritual oxygen for me, but amazingly for those who were also calling in and in, you know, dealing with my moment of vulnerability, were sometimes sharing their own with this group of sometimes strangers, but who were all praying together.
You mentioned your therapist and you're open about the therapy in the book, specifically a trauma therapist. What was specific about a trauma therapist that was useful to you?
Well, my first job out of school was at America's Most Wanted, and I dealt with missing children's stories. And so I understood as a journalist and then in my body when this happened, that there was a dramatic difference from traditional grief bereavement therapy and trauma therapy. And so as a dogged reporter would with my reporter friends, we sought out my therapist who had grown up in the Manhattan DA's office and very specifically focused on trauma. And it made all the difference because this was a therapist who not only could hold my heart and my feelings, but who also literally knew how to navigate this system and understood everything that I was up against with a criminal trial pending and frankly a divorce trial that took 2 years to solve. So having that expertise in that specific area, I think, made all the difference for me.
You write in the book that you found that saying what happened, even if it's horrible, even if you hate to hear it, you need to say it. And in the book, you repeatedly refer to your daughter. You use the word murder in the book really repeatedly. Why was that important? And why is it important to say what happened?
You know, early on, I would say that I lost my daughter. And at one point, my therapist said, you didn't lose her. Losing sounds like you misplaced or you were somehow accountable. She was stolen from you. And so in a way, as horrific it is for me to say, and whenever I speak it, if it's in conversation to someone who, as people do on an airplane or in a store, say, hey, do you have any kids? When I share it, as horrific as it is to hear, it honors the fact that she was stolen from me, that this was not a tragic accident, that this was not a heartbreaking illness. And I think it was the beginning of me taking my power around this narrative to say, this was done to destroy me. This was done literally to destroy my child, but probably more to destroy me. And yet I'm not going to allow that to happen.
My guest is Michelle Hoare. The book is called The Other Side of Yet, Finding Light in the Midst of Darkness. Yet, the powerful conjunction, as you call it. When did you realize yet had power?
You know, literally as we were leaving the crime scene that day, and I was taken on the short drive back to the rental house I was in. And in this world of cell phones on a long drive to get to the crime scene where I was not 100% sure what had exactly happened and was texting with friends as we do. It's like the narrative of our lives. If we don't see it in text, it somehow isn't real today. Mm-hmm. I Googled the verse in Job that I thought I remembered from all of those Sunday school lessons. Though he slay me, yet do I trust him. And immediately it felt like a battle cry. It felt like, I don't understand how this happened. I don't understand why this happens. I'm angry. I'm broken. I'm devastated. Yet, I'm not willing to give up. And it became a defiant screw you to whatever forces in the universe. Mm-hmm. were trying to take me out and obliterate my daughter's memory. And it also, for me, and you know, we use what we have to heal. In my mind and soul, I truly believed whatever it is I'm supposed to do in the universe must be powerful enough that the devil came at me with everything he's got and I shall not be moved. And so I remember that very first night having friends who had gathered at the house, we're all still in shock, being on our knees around my coffee table, holding hands, praying and swaying, and me saying over and over, though he slay me, yet do I trust him. Though he slay me, yet do I trust him. And in fact, it was the very last thing I said when I gave Gabrielle's eulogy.
You describe hope as a stabilizer, more so than love, and even more so than faith, which clearly is important to you. Why does hope stabilize?
Hope is about possibility. It is about what I don't see, but hope is ahead. And you can find hope. You know, faith is very much tethered to, it's a covenant between you and your God, between you and a partner, between you and Mother Nature. Hope is very much an individual thing to me. And you can pull hope from other people. So what I found was giving a eulogy at my most broken moment in my life somehow gave hope to other people. And so that hope became this energy that would grow and that fed off of the energy of others. And so the power of hope to me became paramount, and the ability to wield hope in moments that felt hopeless became like my only road forward.
In our last minute, I want you to tell everybody about Gabrielle's Wings.
Gabrielle's Wings is a nonprofit fund. It's part of the New York Trust. And I developed it because it was most important to me that my daughter's legacy was more important than what happened to her. We are focused on projects in the educational and cultural spaces to help elementary school children and other underserved communities children of color. So that can be things like Y swim lessons, working with Camp Morty, which is a New York camp focused to children who are wards of the state, developing what we call Gabrielle's Corners, both domestically and abroad, where we have access to educational and technology materials. So standing in that gap for children who look like my baby, because I can't do obviously what a mom would want to do for her child anymore.
Those were highlights from my conversation with journalist Michelle Hoard, author of The Other Side of Yet, Finding Light in the Midst of Darkness. More conversation about family and remembrance to come with writer Eric Kim. This is all of it.